Finishing Perek Gimel of Mirtzei Hashem today. Perek Gimel of Mishlei. We've learned a lot, but there's a lot more to learn. So we have a continuation of last week. Last week, if you remember, we talked about all these different things about how to interact with other people. Right? Don't fight with people purposelessly, and make sure that you're connected to the right people. And here we have another sort of the last pasuk of those that list of psukim that we started last week. And the first pasuk here is Al Tikana Beish Hamas, Mishlei Perek Gimel Pasuk Lamed Aleph, which literally translates here to be "Do not envy a lawless man." So Ish Hamas is a very hard thing to translate. Ish Hamas could mean, we've seen from Bereishis, thieves, right? Hamas could mean destructive. Here it's saying lawless. So don't be jealous of a lawless person. And similarly, V'al tivchar b'chol derachav, and don't choose any of their paths. So the question becomes, as we've been keen on trying to distinguish, what's the difference between clause number one and clause number two? Don't envy a lawless person, and also don't choose any of their paths. Well, if I'm not going to be jealous, so then I'm not going to choose any of their paths. And if I'm not going to choose any of their paths, so then what does it mean to be jealous? Yes, Shana.
Well, okay, so I'm going to make the assumption that the lawless person does not feel tied down by rules, regulations.
Okay.
So one might be jealous of them that, you know, they feel like they can just do
whatever they want. They're jealous of their freedom.
Their lack of constraints.
Right. So they're not jealous of anything specific that they're able to do. They're just jealous of their position of freedom. And the second clause is, even in the practicality of something specific that they're doing, you're not allowed to do any of those specific acts. Okay. What else? Any other possibilities? Yeah. Good. So they're jealous of their... Jealous of the outcome of their actions. And then the second half is jealous of their actual actions. Or choosing one of their actions. Right? Because the first clause, you're right, doesn't say what exactly you're jealous of. It just says, don't be jealous of a lawless person. Well, what about them am I not being jealous about? So Shoshana said it's being jealous about their general construct of life, their lifestyle, their freedom, their liberties. And the second half is saying these specific acts, don't do those specific acts. And if he was saying this also similarly, that you'd be jealous of not necessarily any specific act, but maybe what comes from their acts, right? Their lot in life, if you would say. So a similar approach in interpreting that. I wanted to possibly say, and this is before I want to say what I want to say, I wanted to possibly say that the first part is an internal feeling, and the second part is an external result of that feeling, right? Al tikana b'ish chamas means, internally, I feel jealousy, right? That's what I feel to that person. Al tivchar b'chol derachav is what I'm going to do on the outside. Don't make one of the choices of what they do, right? So in a similar way, it's similar in those two ways. I'm coming from more of a social work perspective, so that's where, you know, internal comes to the external. But the truth is that I think that these two clauses are actually talking about different modes of jealousy. I think the first clause could be talking about an emotional mode of jealousy, and the second clause is talking about an intellectual mode of jealousy. And I'll explain what I mean. If you look at Rashi in source number 2, Rashi tells us, "At kana bish chamas," like Aviva was saying before, "la'asos kemasav im tar'ehu matzliach." If you see that he's successful, so don't be jealous of him. Okay? So that means, why are you jealous? Because of what they're able to get, meaning maybe it's greed, maybe it's jealousy out of what they're able to have, maybe it's desire, You have some, either it's money or it's their liberties, whatever it is. It's something emotionally that's pulling you because of their success. If you look at the Gra on the second clause, so the Gra says the following: V'al tivchar b'chod rechav afilu bidrachav hatovim. He's a bad person, but he does some good things. So even the good things that he does, you shouldn't choose those things. Lo tomar elech ve'elmad v'es hara lo akabel. Don't say, I'm going to go and I'm going to learn the bad stuff that he's doing, and the bad stuff I'm not going to do. I'm not going to accept. Lezeh omer al tivchar b'chol derachav. Don't choose any of his actions. Obviously, when he's going to an old lady and stealing from her purse, that's not something one... Shlomo Mel doesn't have to teach us that. But what he does have to teach us is, al tivchar b'chol derachav, even from all of his actions, even if some of those actions are good. You know someone's a bad guy, you think they're doing one good thing, even that one good thing, you shouldn't do it like they're doing it, in the way that they're doing it. He is quoting Gemara in Yevamos, but I think if we put this Rashi and the Gra together, I think what you find is, one is an emotional pull. I want the success of that person. There's something about him that I'm desiring. And the second is an intellectual pull, meaning, yeah, he's a bad guy, but we can distinguish between the bad stuff he does and the good stuff he does. So intellectually, you're pulled to sort of bifurcate the person's life. He's got the good stuff and he's got the bad stuff. Now the truth is that we do this all the time, especially when it comes to politics and when it comes to sports and when it comes to almost anything in life. People make mistakes and we're tasked to distinguish from the bad things they do and the good things they do. I think what it's talking about here is when you have a person who is, by their nature, or by their affect, or by their overwhelming personality, they are evil people, bad people, not role models for bad things. If they happen to do a few things in the minority of their life that are good, so then even those things you can't. So it's always going to be difficult to apply this. But one of the things that I found is very interesting in terms of relating this to modern day is in advertising. I always find it humorous. Why do I care that Matthew McConaughey drives a specific car? Who cares? Matthew McConaughey made his living reading other people's words. In a good way, he does it well, but what does that have to do with a car?
It's aimed towards women, Rabbi.
Is that true?
I believe so.
Okay, well, why do I care that Dwayne Wade drinks Gatorade? Since when is he an expert on sports drinks? Right? He's a basketball player.
But you know why Matthew McConaughey drove that Lincoln?
Because I have no. Is there a movie or something?
There's a movie called The Lincoln Lawyer.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know the sources of everything, yeah. But that doesn't make him any more of an expert.
Right,
that somebody else put him in that car.
That's why he did it.
So what's the basis of all these advertisements? We for some reason get emotionally attached to these random people who we've never met. For one reason or another, we idolize. And therefore, through that, we just assume that anything else that they do is something we should do. So, al tekana b'ish chamas means, don't be jealous of a person because you have some kind of emotional attachment, either to their wealth or to their lifestyle or whatever it is. Right? Why should I buy, State Farm insurance just because a basketball star is in their commercial? Doesn't make any sense. They're not insurance salesmen. They don't know the first thing about insurance. They have people that call those people to take their insurance. They don't even know what insurance is. And I'm supposed to get the insurance because they're in a commercial? That doesn't make any sense. It literally makes no sense. And yet that's what sells. Because if you connect people that you're emotionally connected to, then that's for some reason brings to people the thought. And what I find interesting about this is it's so emotional that there are studies that the advertisers try to make it less intellectual. The more intellectual the commercial is, the less effective the commercial is. If you look at the study in source number 4, brand relationships strengthened by emotion, weakened by attention. This article explores the way, this is a summary of the article. This article explores the way in which advertising builds brand relationships. Behavioral research by Wozlowick, Bavalas and Jackson suggests it is the emotional, not the rational content in communication that drives relationships. This assertion is tested using a new research copy testing system, the CEP test, and the results confirm the favorability towards brands is strongly correlated with the emotional content animating, but not with factual content. However, learning from psychology indicates that high attention weakens the effect of the emotional content. So the implications are that advertising aimed at building strong brand relationships might be more effective if processed at lower levels of attention. Meaning you make a commercial that makes no sense, as long as you got the right emotional pull in there, then that's all you need. Create the emotional connection, and that's fine. And that's what it's saying here. On the one hand, altikana be'ish chamas. Don't be jealous of a person you're emotionally connected to. Chamas is a passion-driven verb, right? It's destructive, it's thieving, right? Something more passionate. But beyond the emotional connection, also al tivchar b'chol derachav. And also, don't intellectually choose one of the things that you think is good about them. Now, the truth is that second clause is somewhat troubling, and I don't have an answer to this. So maybe people can help me out here. Rashi in this past week's Parsha told us the following, that when Yaakov is coming to Esav, so he sends a message ahead, Im lavan garti, im tari mitzvos shamarti, one of the most famous Rashis on Chumash, definitely last week's Parsha. So he says, garti, begematria taryag, klomar, that Yaakov Avinu was saying to Esav, Im lavan garti, v'taryag mitzvos shamarti, I kept all 613 mitzvos, and I didn't learn from his evil actions. What does that imply? What's the implication of that last line? But I did learn from his good actions. One could make that implication, right? One could make that jump. Right? He says, I didn't learn from his evil actions. Just say I didn't learn from his actions. I didn't learn from anything about Lavan. I literally learned nothing. So what does it mean, lo lamadti mimasav haraim? Just say, lo lamadti mimasav. Seems like the implication is you could learn from Lavan if he's doing a good thing. And the truth is, even in Chazal, we learn a bunch of halachos from Lavan. Shever brachos, we learn from Lavan. We don't mix different celebrations together. You can't get married on Chol HaMoed, for instance. We learn that from Lavan. So we do learn Mimas of Hatovim. Right? We learn from Lavan. So the question is, how do we apply this? As I said before, it's not going to be an easy thing to apply. Yeah, Vila. Yeah. Yeah. Same question. You're right. I don't know. And Pirkei Avos tells us that there's something to learn from everybody. Right? You know, halomin mikol adam. Right? You can learn from every person. That doesn't say halomid me, you know, religious people. It doesn't say halomid me rabbis. It says halomin mikol adam, every single person. So what does that mean? How can you learn from every single person if we're supposed to al tivchar b'chol derachav? What about this person? Should we learn from something? So I said at Shal Shudas, I said that I heard from Rabbi Gedalia Dov Schwartz, Lo lamadati mimasav harayim means that Yaakov Avinu was saying, I didn't learn something I could have learned from Esav, from Lavan. Lavan was so passionate and did all his evil acts with such zeal. I could have learned that I should do my good things in the same way that Lavan does his bad things. Right? Lo lamadati mimasav harayim, I should have learned from Lavan. So it's the exact opposite. So in applying this this concept from Shlomo HaMelech, I'm not really sure how to do it, but those are two rules that could apply when you see someone who's maybe not such a good person. And as we know, especially when it comes to athletes and politicians, oftentimes they're not role model citizens for how to act in life, so we have to always be careful and take these words to heart. Yeah, Aviva. Yeah, yeah, it's a harder sell because who would ever think that? Meaning, who would ever think that you should learn all of their stuff? You definitely shouldn't learn all of their things, right? There are clearly things that you shouldn't do. So, I did think that because there are some times, and specifically in, I think, Tehillim, that that's the meaning of kol derachav. Like, for instance, when we say, what's the pasuk? Al tira kilo b'moto yikach hakol. Right? So what does that mean? It says, don't be afraid of someone who's wealthy. How's the pasuk start?
Ki-asher
ish. Ki-asher ish. Don't be afraid that someone's so wealthy. What does that mean? It doesn't mean he's not going to take everything. It means he's taking nothing, right? It doesn't mean he's taking some things. It should be, I mean, if the way that we understand it should be, ki bimoto yikach nothing. Just the way that Tehillim writes it, it means kilo bimoto yikach hakol, he's going to take something. It sounds like he's going to take something. He's not going to take everything. So the question is how to interpret it. And in this situation, I don't think we can interpret it that way, but it means that some things we shouldn't choose. Either way, let's move on to the next pasuk tonight. This is also a difficult pasuk, one of these dangling modifiers, how to exactly split up the words. Ki toavat Hashem naloz. Because abomination of Hashem is a devious person. Right? It's a hard read. But it means that those people who you're looking at, the Ish Hamas, their abomination is to Hashem. Ki tovas Hashem naloz. Those naloses, those people that are devious, they are to'evas to Hashem. Their abomination is to Hashem. The et yisharim, and the people that are straightforward, those are sodo. What does that mean? How does it say here? Intimate with them. Not really sure how you get that from the word sodo. Sodo means either a secret or like a foundation. So unclear exactly how we understand that. But if you look in the Mefarshim over here in sources number 7, number 8, we can find at least the way that Mitzudas David and the Gra interpret it. So first of all, Naloz is someone who is Sar v'hanota midarach hayashar. Someone who deviates from the path. Right? He's going this way, he's going that way. Ve'et im yesharim ma'miksod atzaso me'ahavaso osam. Right? With the straight people, right, the people that are in the straight path. So Hashem is mamik sod atzato me'ahavato otam, meaning he is going to divulge secrets to them. This is a hard thing to read into the pasuk. If you look back at this, v'et yesharim sodo, and those people that go in the straight path, his secrets. It doesn't really say he gives them the secrets. It says his secrets. I would more readily translate it as foundations, like meaning Hashem, you know, is supported by those people, but that's not how it says it. So here's how the Mesudas David says it. First is Naloz, someone who is basically off the beaten path, he's off to the wrong direction. And these people that go straight, so Hashem trusts them. In what way do we find that example that Hashem trusts them? As we saw by Sodom. When Hashem was going to destroy Sodom, who does he ask first? He says to Avraham, "I'm Chasan even Avraham. Am I going to hide from Avraham when I plan to do the stone? I have to tell him." Right? Meaning he's giving Avraham his secrets because he loves Avraham. Avraham loves him, and that's how the Mesudas David understands the pasuk. That and the Gra says similarly, "Ki Yashar hu haholich b'derech hayashar ve'enu notzei yeminu smol." Someone who is straight is going not to the left, not to the right, but straight ahead, v'hifucho, and the opposite is who haholich b'derech akum. He's going crooked. V'zeo shaholich b'derech akum hu toavat Hashem. Someone is going crooked, not in the way that Hashem wants. That's an abomination to Hashem. Aval ha'yisharim hu ohev kolkach. He loves the people that go straight so much until he actually gives them the secrets. He gives them the secrets of what he wants in life. She'ein derech liglo sod el la'oev gadol. You only tell your secrets to people you love a lot.
It's a funny concept, though, because when we would, I think, generally like to think that God makes known to us how he wants us to behave.
Yeah.
It's not a secret. I mean,
Right. For Avram Avinu, he tells secrets. To Moshe Rabbeinu, he tells secrets. What exactly are the secrets he tells us? Not really sure. That's a tough one. I think it's more symbolic than anything else, but even the literal symbolism has to be explained. Yeah, Michael.
You were using the word straight for yeshar.
Yeah.
And when you first said toeva, the first thing I thought was gay and homosexual.
Okay. What does that have to do with this?
Straight is the opposite of...
Yeah, you're projecting the word straight in American parlance to something that has nothing to do with this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't do it on purpose.
Yeah, get your head out of the gutter, Michael. Yeah. Aviva. Yeah. We haven't really seen this word before. I'm not really familiar with it. Oh, you're seeing even the construct of the word. Yeah, it's passive. I think. It's someone who is... I don't really know. I don't know what the base of the word is. I just know that here they translate it as devious, and in the Masudas of they translate it as someone who is crooked. So I don't really know. I don't even know the shorish of the word. I couldn't tell you. Anyone know the nalos?
Crooked devious.
Yeah, but what is the word? Where does the word nalos come from? Do we have it anywhere else? I'm not familiar.
Is the person Lamed Aleph and Lamed Bet the same person?
It's supposed to be. That seems to be, just based on the word key. Right? The word key is, don't follow those people because this is how Hashem thinks of those people. Which I find interesting to continue what Adina is trying to say there. What I find interesting is that in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, you're creating, or Hashem is, or Shlomo Melech is saying, don't create a benchmark based on this Ish Hamas. Rather, who should you create a benchmark based on? Lamed Bet, based on Hashem. Meaning, the first one is, don't look at the Ish Hamas to decide what you're going to choose or who you're going to be jealous of. Rather, Hashem thinks of these people in this way. So you should base it on what Hashem thinks. So it's more about, who do we look at for the model, for a model of what to do? Yeah. Mazeh Naloz. Well, I know what the word means. I just... Yeah, no, this doesn't say... it's just quoting Mishle. It's just... Yeah. We can look into it later, but... I'm not sure. Adina, you're right. The Lamed Aleph and Lamed Bet are really a coupling. They go together. And now in source number 9, Lamed Gimel is a new... it's a new phrase. It's not a new topic. Me'eras Hashem Beves Rasha. That... The curse of Hashem, I think comes from the word aror. The curse of Hashem is in the house of someone who's evil. Unvei tzadikim yivarech. And the abode, what does it say here? The abode of the righteous, Hashem will bless. So, first of all, what's the biggest difference between the two clauses? Is what? Right, curses and blessing, right? That's the main... That's the main phrase. What's the other difference in terms of the description? Right? The Rasha lives in Abayas. And the Tzaddik lives in a Neveh. What is the difference between a Neveh and Abayas? Hard to know if you don't know any other place where Neveh is used.
Neveh always means... Neveh always have Ovid attached to it. It's never just Neveh.
Well, I think that's with a Yud. Right? If you would have like a conjunctive... verb or something like that, like bate avot or something like that. Okay. Elokei Avraham, right? You always put a yud at the end, so I think that's what you're referring to. Neve here, I think, is a standalone noun. That's what it seems like, at least. So neve. Yeah, that could be. Here it doesn't have a yud, so it wouldn't be necessarily conjunctive, but you might be right. So what's the difference between a bias and a neveh? So the Gra tells us that a bias is something very permanent, and neveh is sort of like a temporary home. It could be moved. A bias is something that's permanent, and a neveh is something which is temporary, which is indicative of who we're talking about. Because what is the Rasha? The Rasha is someone who believes in Olam Hazeh. Says the Gra, they believe this world is it. That they're putting all their chips in this basket. This is their bias. This is their permanent dwelling place. This is how they focus their life. But for a tzaddik, who knows that there's something beyond this world, so it's only a neveh. It's only temporary. Yeah, there are other, right. No, there are definitely other times where the bias doesn't mean that. But I think within the same pasuk, what Shlomo HaMelech is getting at is that these two things are supposed to be compared. But you're right. And if you look at Koheles, so Shlomo HaMelech says otherwise, and if we would zoom out for a second from the word bias, understanding like the Gra saying that it's permanent in this worldly, so the bias doesn't only represent literally the four walls that he's surrounded by, but it represents their attachment to wealth. That through wealth, Hashem curses Rishayim. It's through their wealth that Hashem curses evil people. And it's through the homes or the lack of their attachment to their wealth that Hashem praises tzaddikim or blesses tzaddikim. So let's look in Koheles. Shlomo HaMelech tells us in Perek Yud Aleph Yud Gimel, Mesuka Shnas HaOved, that it's sweet when the worker gets to sleep. Im At V'im Harbe Yochel, whether or not he has a little or a lot to eat, he'll always sleep well. Okay, obviously something that we have to think about. V'asava La'ashir, and the satiation of the rich person, Einenu Maniach Lo Lishon. The person who's trying to always be satiated, meaning the wealthy person, is never going to find any time to sleep. Right? He's got so many things to worry about in terms of losing his wealth or in terms of gaining more wealth that he's always going to be busy and stressed out. He's not going to be able to sleep well. Yeshra achola ra'isi tachas hashamesh, says Shlomo HaMelech, I've seen a great sickness or a great evil sickness under the sun. Osher shamur levalav l'raso. That is when an evil person has money that he does bad things with. Meaning, if someone's not such a good person and they have a lot of money, they're obviously going to put it towards bad things. But if there's an evil person who doesn't have a lot of money, at least he doesn't have the resources to do bad things. Right? The avad ha'osher ha'u b'inyan ra. And then ultimately that person is going to lose their wealth in one way or another. V'holid ben v'ein b'yado ma'uma. And he's going to have a child. And that child's not going to get anything. He's going to have nothing. Literally, it could mean they're going to lose their fortune. Or it could also mean that the wealthy person, if you reread the pasuk a little bit without this translation, avad ha'osher hu be'inyan ra, that he's going to waste his money on bad things. Right? Avad ha'osher hu be'inyan ra, v'holid ben ve'en b'yado me'uma. The rich guy is going to be spending the money on all these bad things. He's not going to have anything left over for his child. Right? That's one way you could read it. But I wanted to bring in what seems to me to be also a sad connection. We're talking about a lot of sad things just based on how the psukim are worded today. But there was an article written in 2004 about a basketball player named Latrell Sprewell. Anyone here a basketball fan?
Oh, yeah.
Latrell Sprewell.
Disgusting.
Not the best person. Definitely not a role model. And he had one famous interview that he gave. And this one writer who's somewhat of a provocateur, so he took advantage of, you know, this interview and sort of made this whole picture of Latrell Sprewell in very dramatic terms. So if you look at source number 12, this is picking up in the middle of the article, but he says, he was the back page writer for Sports Illustrated, if anyone knows Rick Riley. He's the Minnesota Timberwolves guard who choked his coach when he was with Golden State, another basketball team. And he said, it's not like he was losing air or anything. He was just choking him, but he was still able to breathe, so it's okay. He told 60 Minutes. He's the one who brandished a 2x4 during a run-in with Warriors teammate Jerome Kersey at a practice and then reportedly threatened to get a gun. He's the guy whose pit bull bit off his 4-year-old daughter Paige's ear and mauled her face, but he didn't want the dog to be put down. Stuff happens, he shrugged. And then this is the kicker. This is why we're talking about this guy today. Now Spree, this is his nickname, has topped his own remarkable self. He'll be paid $14.6 million in 2004 for just one season. But last week he was talking to reporters about how disgusted he is that he doesn't have a contract for next season. Why not help the T-Wolves win the NBA title this season and then see what happens, he was asked. Spree said, are you ready for it? Spree said, why would I want to help them win a title? They're not doing anything for me. I'm at risk. I have a lot of risk here. I got my family to feed. Anything could happen. $14.6 million, and he's complaining he's got a family to feed.
And they're not doing anything.
And they're not doing anything. Literally, $14.6 million of nothing. Whose family is the guy feeding? Brigham Young's? I think that's a college, right?
Yeah.
According to...
It's probably a to the man, Brigham Young.
Oh, you think so? Oh, did he have a lot of kids?
Oh,
yeah? Oh, because it's like for a religious thing, right? Yeah, okay. That's probably good. That's probably the reference. According to U.S. Department of Agricultural calculations, he should be able to feed his wife, Candace, and six kids for $19,237 this year. Even if you take out taxes and agent fees, which leaves him about $8.3 million, he could feed not only his family, but also 431 other families of eight. Actually, through the World Vision Relief Program, he could feed $8.3 million people for one day, or a village of 400 for nearly 57 years. Right? So obviously this guy's going to town on Latrell Sprewell. But that's what it means when Shlomo HaMelech says, he says, Me'iras Hashem beveis Rasha. It's the curse of Hashem when he gives wealth to bad people. Because this person is going to take that money and obviously spend it on things that don't matter, and he's going to neglect his own kids.
So Shlomo, a wealthy person, is obviously not a bad fellow in his eyes.
Well, he wasn't a Russia, so it wasn't a good. Right? Money is only a curse if it's for Russia. But this is sort of like a classic case of someone who doesn't do well with money, and when you give him money, he still doesn't do well. Right, and continues to abuse the system. And I'm, you know, if I had to guess, I would guess he doesn't have that much money anymore. That would be my guess. Similarly, you find that in lottery winners, this is somewhat well known, no big chidushim here, but the lottery winners are more likely to declare bankruptcy within 3 to 5 years than the average American. What's more, studies have shown that winning the lottery does not necessarily make you happier or healthier. Evidence shows that most people who make it to the top 1% of income earners usually don't stay at the top for very long, writes Washington Post's Janelle Marte. Economist Jay Zakorsky agrees with the research. He writes, for U.S. News and World Report, studies found that instead of getting people out of financial trouble, winning the lottery got people into more trouble, since bankruptcy rates soared for lottery winners 3 to 5 years after winning. Meaning, oftentimes Hashem gives people money, and it becomes a curse for them because they don't know how to deal with it. They don't have the discipline. They don't have the work ethic that went into the money, that they respect the money. And therefore, it becomes a curse because ultimately you're going to be like a Latrell Sprewell and have no money for your family. Or you're going to be like a lottery winner. You're going to have no idea how to use the money. So oftentimes, we look at wealth and we say, oh, Hashem's blessing that person. But for a lot of people with wealth, it's actually a curse. Now, there are some people that have so much wealth, it's almost hard to make it a curse. But then you look at other aspects of their lives, not wealth aspects of their lives, and it's really a curse. Who do they give the money to? Who's in charge of the money? What do they spend it on? What does that create in terms of the relationship bonds and, you know, how distant people grow when it's about money? So there's a lot of different things that you could understand from this pasuk. The curse of wealth. We talked about it a few months ago from Rav Simcha Bar Nachman Pshischa, that the snake... Remember this? The snake was cursed. What was the snake's curse? Al afar tashuv. Right? That the snake has to eat dirt for the rest of his life. Okay, fine, he's not going to have a steak, but he's going to have food wherever he goes. What kind of curse is that? So we talked about, Rav Simcha Bar Nachman talked to one of his talmidim and said that the snake's curse was that he has no relationship with Hashem. Because someone who's constantly in a back and forth with Hashem means that they need something in that relationship. And someone who feels like they don't need anybody else is a sad, sad person. And when it comes to the Nachash, he never felt like he needed anybody else. So he was constantly distant from any other relationships. I was just listening to a book today, still working on this book, I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago, called The Power of Habit. I know it, Lewis, I think it's Lewis Duhigg, no? Dowhig? I don't know how to pronounce it. But either way, Power of Habit, he talks about this woman named Angie Bachman. Anyone remember this case, Angie Bachman? So he talks about this woman who had a chronic gambling problem, and she tried to take, I think, he doesn't really go through the court case, but I think the situation was she was trying to blame her internal habits for her gambling problem and not and saying it wasn't a conscious decision-making process. Meaning it was such an incapacitated habit. She was just like, by rote, she just had to gamble. And she was trying to make a whole case based on it, whatever. He compares it to another unfortunate situation. But she literally, she lost $1 million of inherited money because she just wanted to gamble. And she constantly thinks she's going to make it back. And then basically the chapter is, I think I finished the chapter, but the chapter basically ends, she's trying, and obviously everything's secret from her husband. Her husband doesn't know that she's losing all this money, whatever. And the husband says, let's just go out, we'll gamble for a little bit at the casino, whatever. And she loses more money, and she comes back to the hotel, and her husband had already left the casino by the time she had lost all their money, but she comes back to the room, and she says, I lost. And he says, okay, that's fine. And then she says, no, I lost all of it. He says, okay, fine, we still have the house. And she said, no, she put her house up to get a credit line at the casino, and she lost that too. It's literally like a sad, sad situation when someone doesn't have the discipline to use their money properly. So that's what Hashem is, that's what that Shlomo Melech is saying. Me'eiras Hashem beveis rasha. Wealth can be a curse for an evil person.
I had a discussion about dieting. People say, I can't diet. I'm overweight. I would like to diet. I can't. What you're doing is a sin. I'll do all my power to stop doing the sin. That we have the power to do.
It's interesting. It's an interesting point. I heard a funny story about this, actually. I just had a friend over my house, and he was telling me that he lives in Eretz Yisrael, and his son just moved to, just went into high school. And I knew his son when I was, 15 years ago, so it's funny to hear him in high school, but it's not 15, 10 years ago. And his son's going to high school somewhere else, so like he's dorming or he's staying there all day. And he has his own milk in the refrigerator. And he says, it belongs to so-and-so, don't take it. And they still took it. It says, he said he wrote on the bottle, next time, belongs to so-and-so, al tigzol, don't steal. They still took it. So then he said, belongs to so-and-so, chalav akum. And they didn't take it. They left it in the fridge. So something, you're right. In some ways, like, it matters, how you present something. For some things we think we can do it, for some things we can't do it. For whatever reason, it depends on the person. Some people are stronger willed religiously than they are, personally. And some people are stronger willed personally than they are religiously. So each person has to find, and I talked about this last week in the Parsha Shir, finding your bright spots. Finding your, working from a strengths perspective. Find what works for you, find what's good, and then try to leverage that in other areas of your life. So for that, this is how he leveraged it, using a religious component instead of a personal component. But here, when it comes to wealth, so obviously wealth could be a bad thing for people.
Do you know what that is?
Sounds like a truck in a parking lot.
Yeah, parking lot.
Okay. So the pasuk continues, the Shlomo Melech continues, im la leitzim hu yalitz, ula anavim yitain chen. So this is also a difficult pasuk to translate, and therefore hard to understand, especially this first phrase, im la leitzim hu yalitz. You can see based on how they punctuated it here in this version that it's im la leitzim hu yalitz. If he goes to the scoffers, to the people that mock, so then he will also mock. That's how they're understanding it, right? If you look at Rashi, Adam nimshach achrayim l'sof, af hu hi yalitz imahem. If he's going to hang out with people that make fun of things, he's going to also start making fun of things. Right? No big chidushim here. The Rambam tell us, derech b'yasa shel Adam li'os nimshach da'atav, b'da'atav uv'ma'asav achrayav. A person naturally will follow what his friends are doing. And he's going to do whatever country he lives in, that's what he's going to end up being like. Therefore, you have to connect yourself to wise people and righteous people. And you should distance yourself from the people that don't do well. Also a pasuk in Mishlei, ve'omer Ashrei ish ve'chein im haya. That's the first pasuk in Tehillim. Ve'chein im haya medinah shemin hagosel ra'im. So let's say, what can you do? You ended up in a place that's not a great place, right? You ended up in a treif in Medina, right? And the minhagim there are not good. Ve'ein anashe holchem b'derech yishara yelech l'makom sha'anashe tzadikim noachem b'derech tovim. Says the Rambam. Okay, so move. So leave. What are you staying there for? Says the Rambam in 12th century Egypt. And let's say every single place you've ever heard of has bad people. That's what he says. Kemoz manenu. Oh, she'enu yachol lechaz medina sheminechot yom tovim. Mim ne'ag yasos. Om ne'ag holi. Let's say for whatever reason you can't make it to another place. You can't move. You're stuck. So what should you do? Yeshev levado yechidi. Be alone. Be a loner. Stay by yourself. He quotes a pasuk in Eicha. Let's say there are people around you that won't let you go, won't let you be alone. You know, they won't leave you alone. You have to join in with them. Move out of town, go to a desert, live in a cave, live in a place where those people won't bother you anymore. Just get away from those people. And don't go in a way of these evil people. So this is what Shlomo Melech is saying in a more specific situation, but if you're going to connect yourself to people that make fun of others, you're also going to make fun of people because you're going to just naturally follow their path. And this is also part of the trickiness. And if you connect yourself to humble people, yitain chayin. What does that mean, yitain chayin? Who will give to who?
Our translator seems to view God as the actor in both parts of the pasuk.
Oh, you're right. I didn't even look at that. But that's not how the Mefarshim explain it, at least mostly. At scoffers he scoffs, but to the lowly he shows grace. I think the challenge in that translation is the word im. Right? They sort of just skip it. Right? Im la leitzim, if you go to the scoffers, hu yalitz. Right? So the word im doesn't really fit with their translation. At scoffers he scoffs. I don't know if we use the word im to mean at in any other situation. So that's the challenge in that one. But that's what, you know, that's what the translation is trying to figure out. What does the pasuk mean? If you look at the ma, and we saw Rashi doesn't think that, but what does Rashi think about la'anavim yitein chayin? Im la'anavim yitchaber, if you connect yourself to humble people, sof sheyitnu ma'asav chayin be'enehem shel brios. So in the end of the day, what you do will be found favor in their eyes. Now what's the difficulty in that translation? That the first clause of the pasuk and the second clause of the pasuk are talking in different directions. The first clause of the pasuk says, "Im la leitzim hu yalitz." If you're going to connect yourself to mockers, so you'll end up mocking. Hu yalitz, you're going to mock. V'la'anavim, and if you connect yourself to humble people, yitin chayin, then they're going to give you charm, right? They're going to give you favor. But that's the opposite direction as the other one. So it doesn't really, the syntax doesn't work out for Rashi, but that's how you have to understand it, otherwise it doesn't make sense. I thought when I looked at the Mefarshim, I would see someone who explained, la'anavim yitin chayin, that you're going to give favor to other people.
Right.
That's what I thought, but no one says that. If you look at the Malbim says that this is not one of these natural progressions like the Rambam is talking about, but rather it's something Hashem doles out. If you look at the Malbim Source number 18, Im laleitzim hu yalitz, Hashem yisoviv shiye leitzanus ulesicha befi kol abrios, v'zem mida keneged mida. Hashem will make sure that this person will be made fun of. If you connect to mockers, they're coming to you next. Right? You think you're going to be good because you got in the good crowd? right? Or the crowd that's having the most fun, well, you're just next on the chopping block. They're going to come for you afterwards. Avala anavim, but if you connect yourself to humble people, she'ena miskayim lachlok achukei achachma, they're not too haughty to think that they are above the wisdom of Hashem. Shemitzad anvenusanusam, because of their humility. Yodim, they already know. Kisichlam katsar mehesig talumaseha. They know that their intellect is smaller or too restricted to really understand the depth or the hiddenness of the Torah. And therefore, yitin Hashem sheyiyu l'chein be'en habrios. And therefore, your connection with them will make sure that you'll be praised or you'll find favor in the eyes of many. So it's basically a reward thing, according to the Malbim. If you connect yourself to mockers, you'll be mocked. And if you connect yourself to the people that are humble, so then you will also be appreciated. Because those that are humble appreciate things because they don't think they're too good for it. Right? And I don't have to, you know, tell you the destructive power of mockery. Right? I can give the best drush in the world, but if someone makes one quick joke afterwards, the whole thing will come crumbling down. No one will be inspired. No one will think anything of it, and possibly less, they're going to make fun of it, and they're going to stay away from whatever I told them to do. Right? The power of mockery is very strong.
So the katir, in a sense, is anim and the
crazy. Yeah, it is interesting. It is very interesting. I didn't see anyone that talked about it, but it seems to be more than just the fact that the letters are a little similar. It could be, but oftentimes the ksiv and the kri are connected. So it could be the poor person is more humble. Could be. What are they poor from? Not sure either. But they could be connected. The last pasuk tonight is kavod chachamim minchalu uchsilim meirim kalon. Another difficult pasuk to translate, but here it says the wise shall obtain honor, which is actually a difficult translation. They will inherit it, right? Yin chalu is passive. They're going to inherit the honor. In source number 19, Michael. Uchsilim meirim kalon. And foolish people will get disgrace as their portion. Also, difficult translation. Uchsilim meirim kalon. And the fools will lift up, or they will attain meirim, like the word truma. Right, to be Torim could be connected to this Meirim, that they're going to lift up, they're going to attain Kalon, disgrace. I don't know where they get as their portion from. That seems more to be from the first part of the Pasuk. So what does this mean? If so first of all, the Pasuk is not Kavod Chachamim. Well, it could be. It depends how you, we're gonna see the Rabbeinu Yonah in a second. But it seems like, at least according to this translation, it's kavod chachamim min chalu, that someone who's wise is going to inherit honor, right? Kavod, honor, chachamim min chalu, the wise will inherit. And ksilim, the fools, meirim kalon, they will attain disgrace. So first of all, what's interesting is, not only is the word inherit a passive word, and the word mirim an active word, but even in the construct of the phrases, you find it. Kavod chachamim min chalu. Honor, the wise will inherit. That's very passive. The honor is there, and the wise people are just going to get it. But ksilim, fools, mirim, right? First is the subject, and then is the act. Mirim kolon. They will themselves cause their own disgrace.
In Perek about kavod, running after a person, or running...
Oh, so good. So that's almost exactly the point. That here, when you want to get honor, the only true way to get honor is when it's passive. If you're chasing after honor, you're not really going to get it, right? That's what the Mishnah Navo says. So here it's kavod chachamim min chalu. Someone who's wise will inherit honor. Here it says they'll obtain honor. You can't obtain honor. People honor you. You don't buy honor, right? And similarly in the opposite, ksilim, fools, will actively cause their own disgrace. Right? You did that to yourself. Hopefully, assuming you're not with leitzim, so the only time you're going to get disgraced is when you did something foolish. Right? So they did that to themselves. Chachamim, however, they don't attain honor. They just comes to them, right? They sit humbly.
I'm not sure about the grammar. I'm not a grammatical expert here. It would seem better to say that the wise honor is their heritage. That's what.
Okay.
That's because I mean, why is your wise? I mean, you know, you're who did you inherit it from?
So the truth is, if you look at the. If you look at the Gra actually says that if someone's wise, they'll get honor and their kids will get honor too, which is interesting. You know, you think about the psychology of rabbis' sons. There's like an actual study in rabbis' sons syndrome or something like that, and people study like the sons of rabbis. But in some ways, at least in yeshivish circles, it's a big kavod. Hasidic circles, it's a huge kavod, right? So that could be referenced here, but I'm not sure. I hear what you're saying, that it could be even more passive, right? It could be even more passive, because yin chalu is also, I don't know the correct terminology, but it's not completely passive. It is passive. It will be inherited, but it could be kavod. I don't know. In Hebrew, there are other ways that you kavod and nuchal or something. I don't know if you could say it like that even, but there are other ways that are more passive sounding.
Yeah.
Well, that's what David was saying it should say. But yin chalu is actually a verb. It's a passive verb, but it's not saying nachalatam. Right? It doesn't say kavod nachalatam. It says kavod chachamim yin chalu. That's a verb. It's a passive verb, but it's a verb. So it is interesting that it could have been more passive. But either way, it's passive. I think it might be because of its juxtaposition to the next phrase, but I'm not sure. If you look at Rabbeinu Yonah, however, so Rabbeinu Yonah understands this to be referring to someone who's looking at Chachamim, or looking at Ksilim, meaning, Kavod Chachamim Yinchalu, that if someone gives honor to those who are wise, so they also will inherit good things. But Ksilim Mirim, if you lift up the fools, so then, kalon, you'll be disgraced. Meaning, as we said earlier today, who is your role model? Who are you looking to be the person that you say, this is the person I want to attach myself to? Right? When we say in Ala Tzadikim, right? What do we say in the end of Ala Tzadikim? Right? We say, Ala Tzadikim, Arasim, Arasim, right? Yehemur Achamecha. What's the phrase? Al tzadikim al chasim. After we give the whole list of the tzadikim, what does it say? Not good to say by heart, but no, it says that our portion should be with them. It says, that our portion should be with them. And it's a simple idea, but oftentimes harder to accomplish ourselves, which is, who do we want our lot to be with? If I were to give you an option of your favorite actor, you want to meet your favorite actor, or do you want to meet Rav Chaim Kanievsky? So it's a tough decision.
Love you.
Right? I'm saying, but this is what it's like. Kavod chachamim in chalu. That if you want to respect wise people, chachamim, so then you will inherit goodness. But if you're going to elevate ksilim, so then kalon, then it's disgraceful. And I mean, I'm not going to say all actors and all athletes are bad people, but they're certainly not living a Torah lifestyle. Right? So the question becomes, when we say Vesim Chelkenu Imahem, so do we believe that's who we want our portion to be with? So I remember one time a rabbi at YU was giving a Musar Shmuz, and I couldn't find this Sator anywhere, but he said there was once a boy in England, these make-a-wish type things? So it wasn't exactly make-a-wish, because this boy was a Jewish boy. And he had some kind of illness, and athletes try to do good. They go to a place, whatever. So this boy didn't care for sports at all, and David Beckham, who's a famous soccer player, and I'm sure he does other stuff because he's a famous soccer player, and he comes into the boy's room expecting the boy to be like ecstatic to see this, you know, soccer player. And the boy goes, "Hi, thanks for coming." And he says, "You're welcome. Do you know who I am?" And the boy says, "No." He said, "Well, I'm David Beckham." He said, "Okay, what do you do?" He says, so David Beckham said, "I play soccer." And the boy says, "Oh, I play soccer too." And that was it. To the boy, it mattered nothing. He didn't care. He didn't care if David Beckham plays soccer. "Okay, so I play soccer too. What's the big kunst that you could play soccer? Why should I care that you play soccer? Everybody plays soccer." And it sort of gives you a new perspective on things. "Okay, so you play soccer really well, but you're still just playing soccer. Like, you're not my role model because you can kick a ball. Like, if I'm trying to be a good soccer player, you'd be my role model. But that's not what I'm trying to be. So then you're not my role model." So here it says, "Kavod hachamin chalu." If your role model are the people, your role models are the people that are living a life of Torah and mitzvos, so then yinchalo also, the Shari Tshuva says, it's verse number 20, you'll also end up having that same favor. You'll end up having that same righteousness. Because those are the people that you're looking towards. But if ksilim merim, if you're looking towards fools, and maybe not that extreme, so then kalon, so you're going to be disgraced. Maybe not that extreme either. But the point is, whoever you make your target model, right, the person you look towards as how to lead life, so then that's what you're going to end up with. And I think that's what Shlomo Melech is saying in general, and in terms of how to understand it within the pasuk is a bit of a challenge, as we said before. But that's the point. And much of the pasukim that we said today are basically saying, who are you going to attach yourself to? The first pasuk was, don't be jealous of this person, don't choose their path. The second pasuk was, Hashem knows these people, and he thinks that they're disgraceful, or that they're worthy of his secrets. He said that, and then we talked about wealth and people that don't know how to use wealth properly. And we talked about connecting yourself to mockery or connecting yourself to humility. So basically, the end of this entire parak was basically trying to explain to us, we should have good role models. We should have good company. We should connect ourselves to people that are living Torah lives. Whether it's going to be through osmosis that we pick up what they're doing, or through literal instruction and explicit influence, that depends on the situation. But at the very least, we should see ourselves as connecting to these people in theory, and hopefully through that, we will be able to have our own favor from Hashem too. Okay, Shkayach, thanks for coming. Have a good night.